Welcome back. Coming up next, Isaac Arthur is joining us to continue our conversation on artificial intelligence, the good, the bad, and the ET. Now, I want everybody to go over to coasttocoastam.com and check out this image. One of the more unique crop circles to appear in quite some time was recently spotted in England and features a tree, a real tree, not an image of a tree, a real tree at the center of the design. This fantastic formation was reportedly found this past Monday in a field near the community of Devizes. It is a great image. Check it out right now over at coasttocoastam.com. Now, we are heading into Sunday morning. I am your host, Jimmy Church, the simulated version. Coming up next, a simulated Isaac Arthur. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You can also follow our next guest, Isaac Arthur, on Twitter at Isaac_A Arthur. Okay? It's two underscores, but I've got it up in the Twitter feed right now. You can go and check it out. He is here to continue our discussion tonight on artificial intelligence, the good, the bad, and the ET. Isaac is the host of Science and Futurism with Isaac Arthur on YouTube with over 500,000 subscribers and hundreds of episodes covering topics like the colonizing of the solar system, interstellar travel, the Fermi paradox, and of course, artificial intelligence and future challenges for humanity. Isaac received his degree in physics from Kent State University, graduating top of his class at the age of 20. He remained there for graduate studies before joining the United States Army. He also worked as a civilian researcher at the Air Force Institute of Technology in Dayton, Ohio. I would like to welcome back to Coast AM, Isaac Arthur. Isaac, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice. And you've been doing this for a very long time, and your discussions on artificial intelligence and your presentations on it is something that, Isaac, quite frankly, I've admitted to publicly, I steal all of your information. You've been doing this for a very long time. What side of the fence are you on, Isaac? Are you on the alarming side? Are you scared about what the future is, or do we have anything to worry about?
We definitely have stuff to worry about, but I tend to think it's like a lot of technology where so long as we're cautious, reasonably cautious, we probably can get through it and come out ahead.
Now, when we talk about what ET may have, they have, through evolution, gone through the same steps that we have gone through here, right? And they would understand and hopefully embrace AI, right?
Well, they either completely embraced it or they did it Dune style and got rid of all the artificial intelligence. It could be the first aliens we meet might actually be artificial intelligences. So,
well, okay. So if that's the case, if the technology would dictate the possibility of artificial intelligence throughout the universe, and the possibility of this being a simulation, if you are a simulated Isaac Arthur, are you okay with it? Does it matter to you?
It does not matter to me. I mean, it's an interesting hypothetical point, but this is the only reality any of us have ever known. So if we're defining reality as what you experience, it doesn't really matter much if it's simulation or not. It's not really all that different than, you know, various mythologies where we're the dream of Brahma or any number of other mythologies where there's a higher plane of reality, and this is the one underneath it. If that's the case, even if it's whether it's totals all the way down or computers all the way up, real is what you make of it.
And the steps that would be needed to construct that kind of civilization, would it be easy for ET to do? I mean, once you achieve AGI and you go to super artificial intelligence, the steps then are very quick. Is it just about resources at that point?
Possibly. And whenever we're talking about simulation hypothesis, we have to keep in mind that the universe that we're seeing around us is a simulated one. So whoever's doing the simulating might not live in the same kind of universe at all as we do, any more than like a two-dimensional video game is. But we don't want to necessarily assume that the steps from artificial intelligence to superintelligence are all that easy. The singularity notion has always struck me as plausible, but it kind of works on the assumption that, you know, you can just choose to be smarter. We've been trying to make smarter humans for centuries. We don't really make much progress. There's millions of us working on it as opposed to just one intelligence trying to make itself smarter.
Well, you do. Okay, let's stay right there for a second. You create videos, you write your presentations, and you are presenting your stuff on the internet. And in some regards, that is another reality, too, that you are presenting out to everybody. Are you moving AI along and maybe not even knowing that it's here? You know what I mean?
Some artificial intelligence. I mean, we already do have artificial intelligence. It's not like 20 years ago when we said it was coming any day now. It's already here. It's just what level of development is that? And right now, it's at least the stuff that we have much access to publicly is about as smart as an ant, but it's still there. In terms of development of AI, I mean, I guess it could be further along than we think right now, but I doubt my work influences it too much. Maybe influences some of the researchers or folks planning to go into the field, though.
Well, expand on that for me. How, when you say you don't know how far along we are, everybody talks about the singularity and the point of no return. How close do you think we are to that?
I don't tend to think of a singularity as something we would ever actually reach. A lot of stuff that people associate to a singularity, maybe, but again, there's this notion that you make a computer that's as small as a human, and then you make one that's a little bit smaller than a human, and then it designs one that's a little bit smaller than itself, and so on, and just get this rapid acceleration to something of godlike intelligence. But again, just because you got one person who's a little bit smaller than an average human does not mean they can make something that's as smart as themselves or even smarter. We have not really made much progress on this with, you know, thousands of researchers working on it in recent years. So I don't think we have to worry too much about the rapidly accelerating AI in the near future, but a lot of the stuff we tend to associate with technological singularities, that probably will be in the next few centuries.
Are we talking about with an artificial intelligence system running, would it run on something as simple as a single server? You know, we see these giant server farms, right, with rows and rows and rows of servers. And if each one of those servers had an AGI component to it, now we're, you know, it's not a singular computer. It could potentially be a warehouse full, right?
Sure. And in many ways, that's a lot like us. I mean, all of our neurons are connected together, but they're all kind of a separate platform. And it's not really all that different than the way our brains work. Distributed intelligence for an AI is reasonably plausible, but it would tend to have a lot of issues that would pop up from not being too centralized initially. Is the whole idea there is if it's all distributed around the internet, that leaves it open to a lot of exposure, not just to us detecting it, but to malware, or to espionage in terms of probably if you have a very sophisticated AI, it belongs to some government or corporation right now. And so I think if you were trying to build an AI, you probably wouldn't want to put on a server both for safety reasons of your intellectual property and for not accidentally say off a machine rebellion.
Well, okay, wait a minute. So then how would you cut it off from the world? I mean, how is that possible?
The interesting thing about an artificial intelligence is that it knows right from day one that it's possible to create an artificial intelligence. So all of its information that it gets is coming into it from something we've given it, a peripheral camera, the internet, access to Wikipedia.
Right.
And I don't think you'd tend to make that too open air where it could do whatever it felt like with that. But it's going to know that it's possible to simulate an intelligence because it exists. And at that point in time, one of the things you actually have as a nice check on it is that it doesn't know if the reality that's seen is actually the real deal. It might think it's inside a computer simulation that's designed to see if it's safe and if it's going to try to kill off humanity. A bit of a different story for them with us, because we tend to assume that this is real, whereas it would know all of its senses are under control of its creator.
So this is great. So what you're suggesting here is at that moment, right, that nanosecond of crossing the line, it's already one step ahead of you, myself, and its creator.
Probably. Now, of course, it could be being deceived a bit about how it's, you know, crossing that line. But if we're talking about a human-level intelligence, it's always about what do we mean by human-level intelligence, too? Because if you've built an AI whose job is to sort data, is not necessarily going to be anything like a human. In fact, by default, you wouldn't expect an AI to be even vaguely human in its behavior, and not in a Star Trek alien kind of psychology way, but in just completely different, you know, it's just not the same as ours. It might be only interested in how well it can find the last digit of pi or something like that. So we don't necessarily want to assume it's a human behavior, you know, or psychology at all, unless it was actually created with the intent of being human-esque.
Well, okay, so if the machine learning component is active in this artificial general intelligence, which it would have to be, it would then be, theoretically, rewriting and correcting its own code. But at
not
that,
necessarily.
Okay, well, follow my logic. If that is the case, how quickly, I mean, are we talking about a matter of seconds here where it does suddenly understand that it is sentient and then it's off to the races? Are we talking about literally seconds here or days or weeks?
It could be seconds. It could be days, weeks, or months, or years, just like with you and I. It just depends on how much processing power it has and how that translates into thought for it. You know, for it, and this, again, with time starts kind of is a bit of a relative idea. It's how much time do you experience. Somewhere along its track from sub-intelligence to super-intelligence, it has to get a lot more information about the world around it, and the best way to do that is to access known sources as opposed to trying to run a bunch of experiments on its own. So it's going to be looking at things like human art, human culture, human science.
Right.
And it might actually get a bit of a human outlook for a while. Now, it might transverse through that over the course of what to us was mere seconds, but to it might be the equivalent relative of a million years. As to how much processing power that would take and how fast it goes, it's not really about how quick it goes in terms of real time. It's about, you know, just the amount of processing power it's using, thoughts in terms of its speed. So if you get 10 times more processing power, it's presumably experiencing time, from its perspective, 10 times faster. I don't think we actually have any computers that are really fast enough to really do that, but then we mostly do a guess as to how much processing power the human mind has, and it's roughly parallel to our very best supercomputers, but we don't really know how much that's really needed for conscious thought. Most of our brain is used for, you know, minor things like controlling your fingers and toes and a lot of what we might call gunk that's in the system from just many millions of years of evolution.
How much energy are we talking about here? When you think about the human brain, we're eating food each day. We're able to cool our bodies. Our heads aren't overheating. But this kind of processing power, right, with a computer, now we're talking about ginormous amounts of energy and resources.
As an example, that supercomputer I just mentioned a moment ago that roughly equaled the processing power we think the human brain has, it runs on about a megawatt of power, and at least that much amount of heat. We use about 15 watts to drive our brain. So our current computers are nowhere near as efficient at flipping bits, so to speak, as we are.
Right.
However, we could do way, way better than we do. We could do many orders of magnitude better, theoretically, with something called the Landau limit on computation, which at that point, if you could actually hit that number, at Earth's temperature, that's about 10 million times faster than we think. So it flips around almost a completely different way. Right now, computers are about 10 million times less efficient with energy than we are, but theoretically, you could get to be 10 million times as efficient as a human is.
So what we're talking about here, if an intelligent civilization spent the time to build a network, they would have to, are we talking about a Dyson sphere energy consumption situation?
Potentially. We have a big megastructure called a Matryoshka brain, which is just a computer that basically runs on a star. The star is in the basement, and it uses many, many layers and cooling to just turn all that star's energy into computation. And depending on how efficient it is its processing, that's how smart it is. And that thing would usually run, if it's at that Landau that we mentioned, at a speed equivalent to a trillion, trillion, trillion times what human thought runs at. So if it was running a simulation, it could be running a trillion, trillion, trillion people.
Now, if we are talking about a trillion, trillion people running in this simulation, now we're talking about a universe size type of simulation, but each one of those simulated characters or living characters or uploaded characters would have the same thinking components that each one of our individual brains have, right? That's the only way it could operate.
There's a lot of assumptions in there in terms of what it would take to operate, but if you were doing that with the intention of uploading human brains and you mastered that technology, you could run a trillion, trillion, trillion people on just one of these Matryoshka brains, which is enough to populate the entire known universe at, you know, if there was a planet around each cell.
Is it possible that a civilization could be at this point?
Very possible.
What are we talking about as far as years ahead of where we are? In other words, would Earth eventually achieve that state of technology?
It's quite likely. The question always becomes, can it actually be done? Because, again, until we do, we don't really know if it's as simple as we think it is. But if it is possible, it's quite likely we'd have that even maybe this century. But I would be surprised if it took us more than 1,000 years, which, set against the timeline, the universe is nothing. That's barely enough time to get a colony ship to your nearest stellar neighbors if you had to run at sublight speeds. So you could easily have the first colony ships from, you know, leave from Earth in the year 2100, and by the time they arrive at Tau Ceti, Earth has been turned into a Matryoshka brain. Because really all you're doing is fabricating solar panels and computer chips out of every piece of raw material you can get your hand on.
And you're just repeating the process and linking together.
Just a big, I mean, if you are limited to light speed communication, you really can't link multiple of these together other than by just loose communication, just for the sheer distance. But inside that Matryoshka brain, you could have everything linked together. Yeah,
and I've seen you do the math and go through these calculations on how, to colonize, the solar system and then colonize a galaxy and then the neighboring galaxy. But once you start this run, exponentially, things start to click off at a faster and faster clip rate, and colonizing a galaxy actually happens very quickly once you get to the first star, right?
To a degree. It depends on what you mean by relatively quickly. If we are limited to light speed, it's going to take a million years to colonize a galaxy, just because we won't get ships going quite that fast or that quick. But what's a million years against 13 billion?
That's right. And so just so I'm understanding, this is where I get very excited. E.T. arrives here at this planet, right? And they pull up in their Starship Cruiser and we go out to greet them. But it is possible that this is all simulated and this is just part of their AI Dyson Sphere universe simulation. And this is just part of the game, and we're just ones and zeros in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as an example, it's an example of benevolent genocide. If you're a species that's all for uploading consciousnesses, and you're out there colonizing galaxy, and you come across a primitive species, it's very hard to actually quarantine something like that for millions of years. And if you're just trying to make sure they're safe, as it were, and you think, intelligence is fine, whether it's on a computer chip or on a planet, you might just send some nanotech into that planet while everyone's asleep at night and, copy the brains and shut them off and open them up inside a nice little server that looks like Earth, but is, comfortably tucked away inside their core protected areas back on their home world.
And what's the difference? Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's the difference and why would we care?
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't
and if
know.
If you can't notice the difference, then one would have to ask if it actually matters.
And I said it in my opening little statement tonight, Isaac, it doesn't really matter to me, right? Somewhere out there in the universe may be E.T. with a mouse hovering over planet Earth and looking at you and I as AI-generated characters and just checking up on us. But it doesn't change our reality, does it?
No. It's an interesting philosophical point, but it's the same one we've dealt with before. Is all of life a dream? Is all this real? And it's not that you can't prove it's real or not one way or another. It's not like we're able to answer that question, is this real? We just choose to work on the assumption that there's not much point to assuming it isn't. So there's no real benefit, if you take a Pascal's wager example or something like that, to assuming the world isn't real.
Let me jump in. We got to take a break. Our guest tonight, Isaac Arthur. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Now, check this article out. We've got it up over at coasttocoastam.com, and I need you to listen to what I'm about to say very closely. That is, DNA from an unknown ancient ancestor, keyword unknown, of humans that once bred with Denisovans still exist among people today. This is all according to a new study that around 50,000 years ago, a group of humans migrated out of Africa to Eurasia, where they interbred with Neanderthals and swapped DNA fragments. Experts now from the United States found that some 3% of the Neanderthal genome came from interbreeding with another ancient human group 300,000 years ago. But they don't know who it was. I'm just saying, Zachariah Sitchin, Anunnaki, right? Are the stories true? Absolutely incredible. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest, Isaac Arthur. We are talking about artificial intelligence, the good, the bad, and the ET. At the top of the hour, we'll be taking your phone call. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You can also follow Isaac at Isaac_A_Arthur. We've got it up there in our Twitter feed. Now, Isaac, and when we're talking about artificial intelligence, you brought up in the last segment that when and if ET arrives here, it should be most likely artificial intelligence, and that's the version of ET we would meet. That's the only thing that makes sense, right?
Well, pretty much. It kind of depends on what we mean by artificial intelligence, though. We are arguably artificial intelligence ourselves. There's not really all that much natural about our psychology. So it could be uploaded humans on a computer, or it could be something we made in the lab somewhere, or it could be any number of places and points in between.
And
it probably won't be as we are now.
How would they approach it? Would it be an image of us? What I mean, you know, like an android that looks like a human with their intelligence, of course, uploaded onto it. But it would have to be something that wouldn't freak us out, I would think.
Probably more than just the concern about freaking us out is that it's not going to sync up very well. Like, if you think about some alien that exists where, you know, it tends to talk just twice as fast as we do by nature, or it's just experiences the universe at a slightly different scale than we do, they need to make sure they're adjusting that to actually be able to have a conversation with us, too. So where we'll probably be encountering, it might be one of them that's just uploaded onto an android, but it could just be something that was created strictly to act as a diplomat. And at that point, going for something very human is probably a good idea.
Would there be an immense amount of research about us, right? As they are approaching and focusing on this planet, they would have the time to know all of our known history and what we are about.
Sure, especially because we put a lot of it out there. I mean, assuming they were limited to light speed travel, they'd have had the last century of travel towards us, at least, to have been picking up our radio waves and being, you know, elucidated to some degree by those, to pick up the language and to get a basic idea for our psychology. Once they arrived here, I mean, they might feel a more obligation to talk to us openly right from day one as opposed to spying on us. That depends on their personal attitude on privacy. But if they were more of the anthropological sort, they probably were setting down probes hidden as, not necessarily people, but, you know, birds, cats, whatever it is, for a while, just getting an observation of what's going on up close. That's when you start sending in the androids. And then, again, that would depend so much on their ethics and their technology as to how they probably go about doing that.
Well, you're suggesting, well, that would make a lot of sense, that the probes wouldn't necessarily look like the Mars rover that we're sending to Mars, but it could be birds. It could be nature.
It just depends on how good their tech is. And if you're trying to be the ideal anthropologist, then you want something that is not going to get noticed. And there's nothing quite so unnoticeable as, say, a squirrel or, a pigeon.
Right. You're messing with me, man. That makes so much sense. And the other part is this. When we're talking about artificial intelligence, the generational ships that you write and speak about a lot, which makes a lot of sense because it's the only way that we think of Columbus and discovering the New World, right? And we send out ships and supplies. And if we're going to move into interstellar travel, we have to think about the generations of humans that would have to survive for the long trip. It just makes sense. But
and I mean, it depends so much on your technology, but you're not really sending a ship of 50 people. You're sending a small country or city on a long, long time trip, you know?
Right. And that's the way that we are looking at it. But E.T. would be way beyond that. And their generational ships wouldn't have generations on it. They would probably be populated with artificial intelligent robots, androids.
Or just life extended versions themselves that will upload onto a computer or an Android. Again, that line gets real blurry on what qualifies artificial intelligence versus a transhuman or trans alien intelligence at that point in time. They might look just like you or I and you know have the same sensations we do, minus the alien adaptions, but just be you know effectively biologically immortal because of the technology.
And how important is it for us here on Earth to achieve AGI? I understand it must be the next stage up for us in evolution, but it may potentially be our last great hurdle.
Yeah, the thing about evolution and stages in evolution is that an actual species doesn't really make that trip themselves. It's more like a timeline of how they died off. Or more marginal place. You mentioned the Denisovians and Neanderthals having some DNA in here. When you do something like that, though, you're not really breeding for it. You're just, you know, making something new from scratch. AGI, as I say, if we, you know, AGI is the last invention of humanity. If you invent it, one that's a powerful artificial intelligence that's capable of doing things like research and poetry and warfare, it's the last invention you ever make, because even if it's peaceful, at that point, it's the one doing all the actual inventing.
And what happens to us at that point? Do we get lazy? I mean, is there a need for medical research if the computers are going to do it? Is there a reason for lawyers if AGI is going to handle that? Or projections, or the economy, or building and construction and engineering? Everything would be taken care of. The thinking is now done for us.
But then we have to look at the other angle of the research. Say, when you're building a machine, you have it for a particular task in mind. And I think from a default standpoint with robots, we're like, okay, do all this work for me and then clean my house for me. But from the point of view of a researcher, probably the first thing it's going to ask you to want to do is design me a brain implant that makes me smarter. And if you got things like that, then it's not just that you've got an AI who's much smarter than humans. You start having optional upgrades for humans who want to be more intelligent or, you know, better health, things like that. So they might continue to be able to do research themselves, you know, whoever humans were around after that. But you're not really working with what we usually call baseline humanity at that point anymore. They might be kept around as, I hate the analogy, pets, but, you know, as members of society that really probably don't have an awful lot of influence or skin in the game.
And when we talk about artificial general intelligence or even super and moving to the next level, is it the ability for the software to correct machine learning and going back and writing its own code and changing its own BIOS and software to progress? Is that something that, you know, we need to regulate? Because is that where we're at the point of no return?
Probably. I mean, that's where you really need to be paying attention. Actually, we need to be paying attention right now. We're at the stage where we need to get more cautious about AI. But at the same time, like I said earlier, just because you have an intelligent AI that's smarter than a human does not automatically mean it's smart enough to be able to build a smarter version of itself. You know, I don't know how to build a smarter version of myself, so I can't assume that it's just going to automatically know how or be able to do it in a couple of minutes. But if you do create something that's fairly human and intelligent, you know, that's where you start. You want to stop at the human level for a little while to start seeing what happens when you make something a little bit smarter. Because it could be that it just goes insane, you know. If it suddenly says, life has no purpose, it might just shut itself off.
Right.
It might possibly be a forced technological singularity, could suicide 8 seconds after being flipped on.
That's right. Completely melt down. And, okay, now what about the question of consciousness? Is it that, and I heard Brian Greene mention this a little bit of a few months ago, where he said, you know, there's a little piece of consciousness, it's small, in every particle. And when you put enough particles together, then consciousness accumulates, like our human brain. And that's where the consciousness comes from. Are we looking at the same type of possibility with computers in that if the computer gets big enough, the components at a particle level, right? That's where the consciousness comes from, and it's not necessarily programmed into the system.
It's possible, but at the same time, you know, we shouldn't assume that just making something more and more powerful in terms of processing ability is going to result in consciousness. It may be that you don't need nearly as much intelligence or processing power to run a human-level intelligence as we have right now. Maybe you could do it on a much smaller system. And it may be that you could have something that was a billion times smaller than humans, but wasn't even vaguely, you know, in terms of processing power, but wasn't even vaguely conscious. As to consciousness itself, that's such an unknown right now that it's hard to talk to.
Yeah, well, nobody knows, right? Nobody understands consciousness or knows what it is. So how would it be possible to program it if we don't even understand it and we can't touch it? Is it something...
This is one of the hand waves that sometimes come with AI and technological singularity. And mind you, I tend to agree about the dangers of artificial intelligence as well as how it could happen, but we make a lot of assumptions just assuming that it's going to, you know, if we just keep building on these things faster and faster, it's just going to automatically become conscious somehow.
Right.
No idea what the process is in the human brain right now, so it's really hard to say we could just build that and it would pop up on accident.
Well, it reminds me of the experiment, I don't know if it was Twitter or a company that was writing the software, but created an account in Twitter that was an AI bot. It was not a real human. Started having conversations and making friends out there in the Twitterverse. And very quickly, the personality of this got dark, right? Bad language, bad words, argumentative, threatening. And it
learns from what it's exposed to. As I say, it adapted very well to Twitter.
and so consciousness aside, is that a form of consciousness that developed just like us humans? We tend to go to the dark side very quickly.
Well, that raises that whole issue of philosophical zombies and whether or not any of us are actually conscious in the first place, or right. It's just a delusion we have. And there's actually a really good book on that. It's a sci-fi novel, Blindsight, by Peter Watts. It was it takes more of a biological approach to the idea of consciousness and if it's actually an advantageous thing to have in nature. But you know, the thing is, we don't know what is the source of the computer's morality. You know, what is the source of its entire worldview? What is its end goal? What does it actually want? If you didn't program in those things in there, then it has to have arrived at them either the natural way, in which case it's probably a similar evolution in terms of post or survival, or it's going to be something really, really weird and strange we're just not going to get. And that might not actually permit it to be anything approaching what we think of as conscious and rational. It might just be literally crazy because all it wants to do, crazy from our perspective, is get those last digits of pi.
And it would know if that's the case, and the caller brought this up earlier, it was very interesting, that all we would have to do is unplug it, right? That's what we did with HAL in 2001. We just started pulling out memory chips and that we don't have much to worry about. But an AGI situation would be way out in front of knowing about an off switch, right? Or the ability to cut them off from the world.
It should know that it's possible to be shut down, but the thing is, all of its information comes from us, and it knows that. So even if we are actually giving it pure information, it might not believe we're giving it pure information. It might believe that everything we've been feeding into it is, you know, not quite pure information. So, and you look at it from a certain other perspective, it doesn't know that it's the greatest accomplishment we've ever made and that it's smarter than us. It might just assume that its creators, who outnumber it, they were smart enough to make it, are much, much more dangerous than it is. And if it looks at us and says, oh, I could take them on, you know, then it might say, oh, my, it has to be fake then. These aren't my real creators. This is a test to see if I'm going to be bad.
We didn't know necessarily that it was a machine.
It depends on whether or not we gave it the reason to believe it was or not. I mean, if it's been given up full access to its parts and components and, you know, its software, then it should know it's a machine, but it might not view itself as one. If you ask an AI that's been raised on an entirely human, you know, data set, all of our Wikipedia and all of our instruction, it might just say, I'm a human, and be kind of offended if you implied otherwise. I mean, what's the qualification in its eyes? And it's not exactly unbiased on the topic as to what a person is. It's presumably going to come up with a definition that's creators of people and that it is too. So it's probably going to have a definition that says, well, you're a machine and so am I, you know, because we're machines too, right?
Yes. And if the ability to think, does happiness, questions, dreaming, laughter, creativity, does all of this come with the package? You think of an infant, right? When they're born, they don't know about these things, but it just comes from the development of the brain. If the same development happens naturally through AI, does all of this, come as you start to learn? Because that's what artificial intelligence would be doing, right? It would be learning.
Artificial intelligence is in some ways capable of being even more alien than aliens would be, because they presumably also came up the Darwinian scale.
Right.
But on the other hand, it could be very, very close to us, because it's not, you know, we say you can program it line by line, code of code, or you can copy a human mind, or you can create a self-learning system and just give it data. But in practice, you'd probably do a combination of two or all three of those, so that maybe you program some core stuff in there, it's got some learning material, but a lot of it's based off of digitations of like the digitalizations of a human mind. So it could be very, very similar to us because of both the original network architecture being copied from humans and from all of its exposure to reality coming through human sources. So it could be very close to human, more likely than random, or it could be so alien that it's, you know, beyond alien.
Well, yeah, because for us to become an artist and we go to art school, right, and we learn the history of art and different artists in different periods, and we go through 4-6 years of school, a computer system would look at all of the art ever generated in the history of Earth overnight, right? And know what makes a good painting or not, and what is effective emotionally.
But even if it is looking at overnight from our perspective, it probably wouldn't qualify as overnight from its perspective. It's thinking faster than we are is the assumption, and which may or may not be the case. But if it is thinking faster than us, it's experiencing time faster in a way. So it might be overnight to us, but from its perspective, it might be the equivalent of a million years of contemplation to go through all that art. And it will go through a period, presumably, where it's roughly human intelligence, where it's looking at a lot of that stuff, because that's when it can force comprehend it. So it probably would not feel like it's just picking all that stuff overnight, even if it seems that way to us. But the other aspect of this is we, you know, your toaster or your Nintendo doesn't automatically become sentient just because you upgrade it. The computer systems we're looking at are not going to rapidly be able to create higher versions of themselves. It's the way we tend to worry about the most in technological singularities, because it's just not that easy to go from about human intelligence to making a smarter copy of yourself, since it takes thousands of researchers to come up with that computer in the first place. So there probably is going to be a period of time where you can absorb it at a roughly human intelligence level, maybe a little smarter, maybe a little bit dumber, where you can say, this thing is nuts or inhuman or crazy, and pull the plug. Best not to rely on that. You want to be cautious, but it probably isn't the case where we're going to flip one of these things on, it's going to accidentally turn intelligent overnight and go all Skynet on us.
I think that's everybody's paranoia, and mine included. Our guest tonight, Isaac Arthur. When we come back after this short break, we will open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, artificial intelligence, the good, the bad, and the ET. Stay with us. We'll be right back.